Everybody knows it. Toyota trucks are the stuff of legends. Rugged, durable, everlasting, Toyota makes trucks that just don't quit. And now, Toyota is driving that legacy toward the future with two of their most powerful trucks ever, the new Tundra and the all-new Tacoma.
In a half-ton Tundra, you can rule the roads from the comfort of a spacious cabin with connected tech and plenty of hauling power. The Tundra is ready to work hard and play even harder.
Or check out the all-new 24 Tacoma, redesigned and electrified to maximize your adventure. With a bevy of available off-road driving and power transfer modes, you will effortlessly crush the conditions. And with the Tacoma's reimagined interior, you'll do it in style.
And right now, your local Toyota dealer has more vehicles in stock and is making delivery on new vehicles almost every day.
So don't wait. Buy a Tundra or Tacoma today. Visit buyatoyota.com for deals and more.
Toyota, let's go places.
Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna have ya. Tanaka's Fakata, a jag like Michael Walker. Polanco and Franco.
It's the final weekend. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball today on our final Kokomo Friday of the 2020 season, September 25th. Frank Stanfill alongside Scott White. Scott, how bad was my singing the final countdown?
I thought you were using the voice manipulator, frankly. That was a high pitch you hit there. Very
yeah,
good.
That was my falsetto. I believe that's what they call it.
That is what they call it, yeah.
I didn't know I could get that high, but you know what? You learn something new every day. Seriously, I was debating whether or not I should sing to start the show up until like right when we started the show. So I hope you all enjoyed that. He is Scott White. I am Frank Stanfill. And I don't know about you, Scott, but I am getting excited for some October baseball. Up here in New York, in the Northeast, there's a chill in the air. Every pitch counts this time of year. There's not much like playoff baseball, and in my opinion, I'm very excited. Are you hyped, Scott, for your Atlanta Braves?
Yeah.
You don't sound very hyped.
Expecting to be totally disappointed in the end.
You sound like you're trying to talk yourself into it.
You know what the playoffs are all about, so you curb your expectations, especially when you look at what their playoff rotation is this year, and Max Fried, Ian Anderson, Kyle Wright. That's what they're running out there. I assume if they advance to round two, which I'm not expecting them to, because come on, that hasn't happened since 2001. But I'm assuming if they advance past their first postseason series, it'll be Bryce Wilson in game four, I would assume. You know, and that's kind of cool that it's all homegrown guys. Max Fried isn't entirely homegrown. He came over from the Padres, but you know, he spent a lot of time in the Braves system before getting called up. So that would be kind of cool that, you know, the rebuild has culminated in these four homegrown pitchers starting a playoff series for you. I'm just not sure more than two of them are good, but we'll see.
Oh man. And you know what? The way that the National League is shaping up right now, if the season ended today when we're recording, well, we're recording Thursday night, of course, but you're listening to this on Friday morning or afternoon or anytime over the weekend, the Braves would face the Reds. I would not want to face the Reds, Scott, with their pitching staff, too.
It's all aligning perfectly, Frank. Coming together.
And you know what? The Yankees would face the White Sox, so that's pretty tough for me because, of course, you know,
mercy!
Hawk Harrelson, you know, I like the White Sox. I love Jose Abreu, so that wouldn't. I don't think that would be the best either. So, we'll see.
Yeah, I guess the Reds wouldn't be the worst. They wouldn't be the eighth seed, as if things ended today.
Scott, okay. This is our last podcast of the regular season. Are you sad?
Yeah.
Oh, you liar! You're happy that the season is over.
We're gonna be doing plenty in the off season.
It's
you
true.
And me and some other guests, presumably about two a week, right, is what we're aiming for.
Yeah, that's what we're aiming for. And you know, whenever crazy things happen in the off season, because they will happen. Figure out where Trevor Bauer is going to sign. You know what? Atlanta wouldn't be such a bad spot for Trevor Bauer to go. But we will some emergency podcasts for whenever players sign, big name players, if any trades happen in the offseason. So we'll have you locked and loaded. Make sure you're subscribed to Fantasy Baseball Today, of course, and those podcasts will arrive in your app, no matter where you listen. Today on the show, it's our last, oh my goodness gracious, of the season. Some championship weekend starting pitchers to stream or not to stream, some hitters you might want to add for the weekend as well. And of course, we'll wrap up with some Thursday recap, some 2021 chatter. We got to get back to the Salvador Perez conversation because I looked at his StatCast numbers. He has to be the number two catcher off the board. Save that for a little bit later on.
Oh my goodness gracious.
All right, Scott, is there really any other name here? Can we just say that it's the same person together? On three, let's say the oh my goodness gracious player of the night. Scott, don't look down at the notes like you don't know who it is. You know who it is. One, two, three. Lance Lynn. Yes, it is Lance Lynn. When I saw this line today, my jaw actually dropped. And I don't even have him on any fantasy teams. But how about this? 5 2/3, 12 hits, 10 runs, 9 earned, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. The season ERA ends at 3.32 with a 4.35 xFIP. And Scott, we've kind of tiptoed around this all season long where, okay, Lance Lynn was performing really well, but we would say here and there that, you know, the underlying numbers don't say that he's been this good, but obviously you just continue to roll him out there because he has pitched so well. And the regression game, it feels like this is the 10th time I've said this in the past week, just comes at the absolute worst time.
Oh, yeah. It's been an awful week for pitching. It really has. This is just another example. Yeah. Obviously, it stinks. I actually do have Lance Lynn in a bunch of leagues. Fortunately, in Tout Wars is one of them. And fortunately, my lead in ERA and WHIP is so great that this start didn't hurt me at all, really.
Humble brag.
There is another close battle in a head-to-head points league where, you know, I could have stood not to have this negative point total from Lance Lynn today, for sure. From like an analyst perspective, an analytical perspective, I guess, now that the ERA is 3.32, the WHIP, by the way, is 106, so still really good. The ERA, you know, solid 3.32. I feel better about ranking him based on those numbers than what the numbers were going to look like before this. You know, I feel like this is a more appropriate way to gauge Lynn. Like, the regression came all at once. And, you know, if you're a big subscriber to XFIP, 435 XFIP, you know, you could argue that more regression was due to him. But, you know, it's obviously not that simple. He's been really good now for a year and 2 months. So I'm curious what his XERA. Yeah, his XERA coming into today's game, that's the StatCast one, was 302. So you can certainly break it down in different ways. My favorite is XFIP, but it's not the end-all be-all. So I don't mind evaluating Lance Lynn on the face of his numbers now going into next year. I think it's going to be appropriate. So that helps in a way. That helps in what's going to be a very frustrating ranking process.
And I'm happy you brought up the XERA. Again, that is the ERA estimator that is used on StatCast. So what it does is it calculates what your ERA should be based on the quality of contact that you allow according to StatCast, the launch angle, the average exit velocity that a pitcher allows, and it calculates what your ERA should be. And you mentioned that entering tonight, it was 3.02, which is in the 88th percentile in baseball. So, you know, before we started recording, I said, you know, I don't think I'm going to have much Lance Lynn heading into next season. I looked at the XFIP, it's over 4. The StatCast numbers make me feel quite better because 92nd percentile with his spin rate on his fastball. I mean, this is a guy that is predominant fastball pitcher. So to see that, I mean, that makes you feel a little bit better. All right, I do. I do. Overall, I feel a little bit better about Lance Lynn than I did about 10 minutes ago, for what it's worth. And we have a whole offseason to deep dive and talk about him anyway. But I do feel better. Someone I don't feel better about, Scott, is Patrick Corbin. I guess you could call this a quality start, because technically it was. 7 innings, 10 hits against the Mets. 3 earned, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts. We told people we didn't want to use him in the spot the way that he's been pitching recently. Speaking of which, he's allowed 9 or more hits in 4 straight games and 24 hits over his last 2 outings in particular. 10 in this one, 14 in the start before. I don't feel good about Patrick Corbin for 2021, Scott.
Well, yeah, I mean, the good news is if you started him over our objections, if you started him, you lived to tell about it. But this, yeah, some bad signs here. 4 swinging strikes on 113 pitches. So that rate, which wasn't looking so bad. I mean, it's been going down. Everything's been going down for Patrick Corbin over the course of this season. He's not that old. So I'm hesitant to bury anyone over what happened these 2 months, to just to say, oh, it was so bad that they are not worth our time anymore. Because I just don't think any 2 month stretch that's something you can really do. And especially a 2 month stretch that was as loopy as this season's, where teams were having to shut down for a week at a time, where the whole league shut down for several months, and you know, suddenly everybody had to build up again. Like, plenty of players handled that fine. It stands to reason some of them won it, right? So, look, I don't expect to see Patrick Corbin in my top 30 starting pitchers next year. Velocity was down. A lot of the indicators I care about most were down. But he's not that old, and it was a weird season, and he had a 2-year track record of greatness. And if he drops much outside of that top 30, I'm going to be interested in investing in him. I don't think there's much risk at that point, and we know what the upside is.
I don't know if you noticed, Scott, or anyone else who is watching. Again, you'll watch us, reminder, on our youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. There was a point where you were talking about Corbin where I pulled up his Statcast page, and my face just went like I saw a ghost. Because I'm bloom, da-dum-dee-da-dum-dee-da-dum-dee-da. A lot of singing today.
You're just
nothing but blue on his Statcast page. His xERA 5.32, and that was before the start against the Mets. Oh man, we're gonna need some really good explanations in the offseason for what happened with Patrick Corbin in order to buy back in, because this does not look like the pitcher we have seen the past couple of seasons. So all right, something to pay attention to: Corbin and Lance Lynn in the offseason. Some news and notes. Oh no, Corbin Burns, from one Corbin to another. He exited Thursday's start against the Cardinals with an apparent injury to his pitching hand. He wasn't great either in his start. He was at the Cardinals, 3 2/3, 6 hits, 3 earned, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. Scott, I think the biggest issue that I've seen with Corbin Burns to this point is probably the inconsistency with his control. I just think there are times where he has these high pitch counts where, you know, we see a lot of full counts with him, some walks at times. He's a strikeout pitcher, so I guess that's bound to happen. But you see a lot of these, like, barely 5-inning starts out of Corbin Burns. I would say that that's the one drawback with him. It's something he can build on because he's still young, but it's just that inconsistency.
Yeah, sure. That's fair. I mean, the story with Corbin Burns, well, part of the story with Corbin Burns this year is that hasn't been nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be, as I'm sure a lot of people thought it was going to be. So it may have reached a point over his previous, let's see, 5 starts, which were just, he gave up a 1 earned run across those 5 starts and a ton of strikeouts. So obviously he's been getting a lot of hype lately. So maybe the hype has reached a point where we have to kind of temper expectations again. But yeah, he's not this totally established sure thing. He's a very impressive talent who made huge strides this year. And so, you know, if you rank him according to his stats, I think you're probably making a mistake. Even so, it's hard to imagine ranking him outside of the top 20.
That's what I was just thinking too. Oh, man, I wonder if the hype will get out of control. Top 20, it's a big ask for another pitcher that we don't know what the workload necessarily is going to be heading into next season because, you know, he's never really thrown that many innings, at least not recently, because he's been used more so as a reliever. So we'll see. We'll see with Corbin Burns. But I wonder if the hype is going to get out of control. The Yankees manager, Aaron Boone, said that this deciding who will start at catcher between Gary Sanchez and Kyle Higashioka during the playoffs will be, quote, a day-to-day decision, according to Lindsey Adler of The Athletic. Low-key, Kyle Higashioka has some great Statcast numbers. We've been dealing with small sample sizes all season. We're talking 47 plate appearances here for Kyle Higashioka, but 263 XBA, that's fine. 570 X slug, all right. I mean, that's, you know, that'll work. That'll play. He has hit 4 home runs in those 47 plate appearances. He's a great pitch framer. I saw a quote from Aaron Boone, you know, talking him up, the way that he receives the ball, and, you know, obviously he's done great work with Gerrit Cole. He's basically become his personal catcher. So I will just bring up the possibility that in deeper leagues, in two catcher formats, dynasty leagues, you might want to stash Kyle Higashioka. I was talking to one of my Yankee sources, a.k.a. my friend, who is a huge Yankee fan. And he said he thinks there's a chance that Gary Sanchez could be traded in the offseason. I don't think it's crazy, so I'll just bring up the possibility of if Sanchez is gone, they're talking up Higashioka, he might be the starting catcher for the Yankees next year. Just keep that in mind in deeper leagues if you want to stash him. Jamer Candelaria, is there anything you wanted to add on Higashioka?
Well, just that he's played 14 games. You talked about a small sample size. He's played 14 games. And I imagine they weren't all starts. So, something to keep in mind. Now, he did hit 20 homers in just 70 games at AAA last year. He did that as a near 30-year-old in a juiced ball environment. So take that with a grain of salt. That being said, how many catchers around age 30 have we seen break out this year? Austin Nola, Max Stacy, a lot of guys. You know, it takes a while for that for players at that position to develop. So I know that analysis is all over the place, but you know, let's see what happens. Right now, Higashioka is not in my top 20 catchers for next year. And even if Sanchez was traded, I don't think he would be.
That seems fair, but. Mild optimism for Higashioka. See what happens. Jamer Candelario left Thursday's game against the Royals with lower back tightness and is considered day-to-day. Guys, if we get any reports over the weekend or Friday that somebody is not in the lineup and, you know, expected to miss a couple of games, they'll just be shut down. You could drop this player, especially someone like Jamer Candelario, who was a fringe player anyway. Eloy Jimenez left Thursday's game against the Indians with right foot soreness and will be further evaluated on Friday. Another name to pay attention to. If they say he's going to sit out a few games so that he can rest up for the postseason, you can drop Eloy Jimenez. Carlos Martinez was placed on the 10-day IL with a left oblique strain. Renato Nunez is dealing with knee soreness that kept him out of Thursday's lineup against the Red Sox. One of the Yankees top prospects Clark Schmidt will be called up and will start Sunday's game against the Marlins. Originally, that was supposed to be, I think that was supposed to be Gerrit Cole's start. So Cole will not start either way. I think it's Davey Garcia on Saturday or Davey Garcia Friday, Jay Happ one of the days, and then Clark Schmidt on Sunday. So Gerrit Cole will not start. Scott, would you have any interest in streaming Clark Schmidt against the Marlins?
I would not. No, I think, I mean, we could talk about some streamer options over the weekend. He's not anywhere near the top of that list.
He is somebody who I would want to watch start.
Sure.
Just in that matchup because there's a lot of hype around him in general. But yeah, I think it's a little bit too risky with your championship.
This isn't his debut, by the way. He was up some for doubleheader. I think he made some multi-inning relief appearances.
Yep, that's correct. And he didn't look great, but you know, whatever. It's his first couple of innings in the majors. So Clark Schmidt this Sunday. Nate Pearson was activated prior to Thursday's game against the Yankees. Please, please, Pearson, just make it through the postseason healthy, have a nice offseason, come back strong, someone that we can be excited about heading into next season. Mike Clevinger's initial diagnosis is a sprained right elbow. Does not sound good, but the Padres are holding out hope that he will be able to pitch at some point in the postseason. John Heyman reported that they are hoping he's ready for the NLCS if they make it that far, so does not sound great for Mike Clevinger.
A sprain is a minor tear, right? Isn't that how that works?
Sounds accurate. I'm no doctor, Scott.
Sprained pitching elbows for pitchers are, you know, sprain doesn't sound like a serious injury, but that to that specific part, that makes me nervous. That makes me nervous.
According to WebMD, a sprain is a stretch or tear in a ligament.
So it could be a stretch.
Like a ligament in your elbow. Yeah. That doesn't sound too good for Mike Clevinger. Gosh. Just gut-wrenching. Michael Conforto was placed on the IL Thursday with hamstring tightness. His season is over. He can be dropped. Jesus Luzardo was used in relief on Thursday, so I think it's safe to say that he will not start over the weekend. Right, Scott?
Safe. How much did he pitch?
That is a fantastic question.
I mean, we were thinking they were going to save him for the start of the... He pitched three innings through 54 pitches. So, okay, yeah, I think that's pretty safe.
Yeah, he's not going to pitch. So
he didn't pitch that well, by the way.
Yeah, so if you had him in your lineup hoping that he would start over the weekend against the Mariners, which was a much, much better start than, you know, pitching in relief against the Dodgers. The Dodgers. Yeah, didn't work out well there for Jesus Luzardo, and he can be dropped as well. Email of the day from Marcos. Can you mention some Hail Mary starters or high-level relievers to add to make a final push in ERA and WHIP over the weekend? Normally, you mentioned you wouldn't risk to protect your ratios. What if you needed to gain? So, we are about to talk about some streamers in just a little bit, so I thought we would mention some relievers before we get to those. And I just looked up, honestly, the leaders in ERA among relievers, and I don't know how available these names are. But Drew Pomeranz has been great all season. Devin Williams, we've talked him up. He probably isn't available if people are using relievers in your league. Jake Diekman has been very good for Oakland. Chris Martin for the Atlanta Braves. Tony Watson, Kyle Zimmer for the Royals. Tyler Duffy for the Minnesota Twins. John Curtis for the Tampa Bay Rays. And TJ Antone, someone we mentioned a couple of weeks back for the Cincinnati Reds. He might actually give you a little bit more bulk, too, if they need him for a multi-inning relief appearance. TJ Antone could be in that mix. Any other relievers come to mind, Scott, that you might want to pick up to help with ratios and strikeouts over the weekend?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the easy answer is Devin Williams if he's out there. He's 39% rostered, so in a league where middle relievers are value, there's a good chance he's already gone, but that's the obvious one, 52 strikeouts in 25 innings. Beyond that, I mean, Mike Myers is pretty high. Did you mention him, Mike Myers of the Angels?
I didn't, but he's only rostered in 7% of CBS leagues.
M-A-Y-E-R-S. He's become a multi-inning reliever with a huge strikeout rate like Devin Williams. Matt Foster hasn't been as reliable lately. It's the White Sox, but the overall numbers are still really good. Yeah, those are probably the ones I can get behind most.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I'm scrolling through the most added on CBS to see if anyone else stands out to me. Ryan Brazier is someone who I believe has pitched well for the Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, he doesn't even get that many strikeouts though, right?
Probably not. Matt Barnes is only 37% rostered in CBS, so if you need saves too. Seems like that.
Oh, yeah. If you need saves, some of these roster percentages are really low. Actually, I was just looking at Greg Holland. He got an oblique injury. Come on, Greg.
Greggy, come on.
What about Stalmont?
Stalmont.
He's showing up higher here.
Could be a nice little sneaky sneak ad for the weekend as well. He gets a lot of strikeouts. His whip is not very good, though. He walks so many.
Yeah, the whip's 1.35. That's probably why.
Yeah. All right, Scott. So championship weekend, some starting pitchers to stream or not to stream. Yes, I am about to read the must starts, and this list is about 30 names long. So bear with me. But if you have any questions about these guys, I'm just going to tell you, start these names over the weekend. Max Scherzer against the Mets. Zach Gallen at home against the Rockies. Carlos Carrasco, great matchup against the Pirates. Dinelson Lamet at the Giants, Yu Darvish at the White Sox, Jose Berrios versus the Reds, Jose Urquidy. I know he's not normally a must-start, but against Texas, he's dominated them already. I love the matchup. I think he's a must-start. Clayton Kershaw against the Angels, Jacob deGrom at the Nationals, Lance McCullers, another one like Urquidy, at the Rangers, Brandon Woodruff at the Cardinals, Zach Wheeler at the Rays. I know Aaron Civale has not been great recently, but I like the matchup against the Pirates, so I will say that he is a must start. Luis Castillo at the Twins, Framber Valdez at the Rangers, assuming he makes that start on Sunday, Aaron Nola at the Rays, Trevor Bauer at the Twins on short rest, and for the final time, Scott, Jack Flaherty in Miller Park?
I think so. I mean, I'd go for him over Urquidy. I'd go for him over McCullers. I'd go for him over probably a few names on this list.
What do you think about Civale, Scott? Should he still be a must start against the Pirates? I think the matchup is still too good.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the more borderline ones here. I would imagine everybody who has Aaron Civale should be looking to get him in their lineup. It's possible somebody's rotation is just so stacked that they have to leave him out, and that's fine. He's toward the bottom of this list if we were ranking them all, but I wouldn't be afraid to start him, certainly not.
Some actual players, pitchers, that you can stream over the weekend who are widely available. Scott, it all comes full circle for me, of course. I'm going back to the well with my Pittsburgh Pirates. I was going to say Brad Keller. I like the matchup against the Tigers. He's 78% rostered in CBS, so I went with another Keller. I went with Mitch Keller, who is at the Cleveland Indians on Friday, and his last time out, 6 no-hit innings. So I like the matchup for Keller, although Jose Ramirez just continues to mash for them. Same thing for Joe Musgrove on Saturday. His last time out was phenomenal. I believe he had double-digit strikeouts, and he is at Cleveland as well. And then Sunday, Brady Singer. I know he wasn't good his last time out. The Tigers hit Bubich on Thursday, but they are good against lefties. They are very, very bad against right-handed pitching. So Brady Singer, and if you're really desperate, I don't hate Brett Anderson at the Cardinals on Sunday as well. Scott, a few names that you think could actually be available that you would stream this weekend.
The one that's most shocking how available he is, because he's available in more than half of CBS leagues, going Friday is Tyler Molly of the Reds, who I think is having a huge breakout season. I mean, showing he can go deep into games, getting a lot of strikeouts, double-digit strikeout efforts. He is going against the Twins, but the Twins, who have already clinched, and I mean, frankly, as well as Molly's pitched, I trust him against just about anybody. So he's somebody I like a lot for this weekend. I'll go day by day like you did. And on Saturday, Musgrove's probably the best one. But just to throw a different name out there, I'll say Justice Sheffield, who I know you like a lot. He's rostered in about half of CBS Sports Leagues, too, and he's going against Oakland, who I believe you said before the show is 24th in WOBA against left-handed pitchers.
Correct.
Yeah, and of course, Sheffield's been pretty reliable, so that's not a bad one. And then on Sunday, Singer's the obvious one there, but you already picked him. So I mean, Seth Lugo's 72% rostered, but as good as he was last time out, I do want to highlight him going at Washington, somebody who might be more available. I'm tempted to say Drew Smyly here. It's San Diego is the matchup, but he's just been so dominant with the strikeouts. Certainly, if strikeouts specifically is what you're chasing, I think Drew Smyly is a fine sleeper for you.
The Padres' offense has not been nearly as good in September either. I know Tatis has slowed down. Over the past 2 weeks, they're 18th in weighted on base average. So I don't think it's crazy, especially if you need strikeouts. That's the one thing Drew Smyly can provide for your fantasy teams. Scott, you mentioned Seth Lugo. I was going to ask you about the person who is starting opposite him is Austin Voth, who has now put together two pretty damn good starts in a row, or is that too risky?
Yeah, the result was good. The underneath numbers, I wasn't seeing much there to get me excited, so that seems way too risky for me.
All right, well, the name of this segment is actually to stream or not to stream. So let me ask you about some tough calls this weekend, either some pitchers that have pitched well recently, they have a tough matchup, players who have pitched pretty well all season long, but the matchups, you're just a little worried about these. How about Griffin Canning, who is at the Dodgers? The Dodgers.
He has pitched better lately. The matchup's worrisome. And look, it's one of those situations where if you're throwing a Hail Mary, like you just you're you need a miracle. You need a miracle. You have to shoot for the miracle. And I don't think Canning is a bad shoot for the miracle candidate, but you'd rather not have to play him.
How about Davey Garcia, who had his worst start out last time against the Red Sox? He is going up against the Marlins.
And I think the velocity was down in that start.
He was
a little worrisome. I'd be more likely to play him than Canning.
Yeah.
But I'm not totally comfortable with it.
Yeah, Davey Garcia's fastball velocity was around 90 his last time out, whereas it has been around 92 frequently. So I hear you there. Matchup pretty good. He is home, so don't love that part of it. But Marlins, I get behind that. Dane Dunning has pitched well all year. The Cubs are kind of a meh matchup. I'm not like super scared of them, but they do take a lot of pitches at times. Get your pitch count up. What do you think? Dane Dunning against the Cubs.
I don't hate it. He's been good all year except for his last start. And I don't like the way the swinging strikes have been trending. So, you know, far from automatic, but probably the one I'm most comfortable with of the three we've named so far.
Michael Pineda going up against the Reds.
Yeah, that one's easy. I almost mentioned him as my favorite for Saturday. 69% roster. That's pretty high. But yeah, I mean, the Reds are fighting for their lives right now. They're playing well. But I just think Pineda's really good. So
Dylan Bundy has not pitched as well recently. He is at the Dodgers this weekend.
Yeah, I'd still run him out there.
Michael Scott give kind of scared of that one. Herman Marquez, who Scott always seems to defend, is at the Arizona Diamondbacks. You get Herman Marquez outside Coors Field, Scott. You going to roll him out there?
Normally a good thing, yeah. Yeah, I'll roll him out there.
Taijuan Walker, someone who Scott does not like, is going up against the Orioles.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good ask for a miracle type of play. He's been, despite my objections to him, he's been pretty consistent, and this is a favorable matchup, and you could certainly see it going very well. Rather not have to do it, but it's a fine play.
Charlie Morton going up against the Phillies.
Yeah, he hasn't been going deep into games, right? It's really hard to see a scenario where he makes a real impact for your team, you know?
His last time out, he went 5. He allowed 1 run with 6 strikeouts. That was at Baltimore.
Yeah, the most he's gone since returning is 5 and across 4 starts. Like, he seems less likely than some of these pitchers to damage you, but if you're playing an SP streamer, I presume it's because you need to make up ground, and I don't really think he's going to help with that.
And the Phillies are pretty hot over the past couple of weeks. I am going to say no. Someone who loved Charlie Morton coming into the season, but it's been a big letdown, if we're being honest here. Jay Happ against the Marlins.
Yeah, I think, again, not something you, if you're trying to preserve a lead, that you do, but if you're trying to catch up, the way he's pitched recently, sounds like a good play.
Sandy Alcantara on the other side. He's been great, but in New York against the Yankees.
Yeah, that's a play I'd be okay with too. I think I like that more than like Griffin Canning.
Andrew Heaney, who has been good, but against the Dodgers.
Mm. Yeah. It's pretty good. That's a pretty good start.
Chris Bassett against the Mariners.
Yeah, because of the matchup. I don't have a lot of faith in Bassett and what he's done this year, but the matchup makes it pretty easy.
Chris Paddock against the Giants.
Yes.
And yes. Rich Hill against the Reds.
So I don't feel as good about Rich Hill as I do Michael Pineda going against the Reds, but I'd lean yes on that.
It is worth noting that the Twins stink against left-handed pitching. He is on the Twins, so that doesn't matter.
He's on the Twins. Yeah, that's not worth noting.
It is not worth noting because Rich Hill will not be pitching against his own team. It is worth noting that the Reds have not been great against left-handed pitching this season. They are 23rd in weighted on base average against lefties, and they are in the middle of the pack against right-handed pitching. So, better matchup for the lefty. I don't mind Rich Hill, but I think Michael Pineda is more trustworthy, which... when have you ever been able to say that confidently in Michael Pineda's career? 2020, that's the only explanation that I have. We're going to take a break. I want to promote a few things. A programming note, remind you, we've already talked about this, but this is the last week that we'll be going five times, starting next week, actually, well, starting the week after. This upcoming week, you'll have two podcasts with Scott and myself, but there will be a third podcast in your feed, which will be a betting preview for the wild card round of the baseball playoffs. No, we're not turning into a betting podcast, but we're just trying to add a little extra something to your feed if you're interested in, you know, throwing some shekels around and getting involved with betting for the wild card round. And if you want to throw some futures on some teams to win the National League, to win the American League, to win the World Series. We'll talk about a few of those things.
Look at you flexing that vocabulary. I like that. No idea what it means, but I like it.
Honestly, Scott, I don't even know what it means either, but I'm just going to keep saying it.
Somebody will be on who does.
But next week, we will have our award show. So we'll talk about the fantasy MVP, the fantasy LVP, the least valuable player, the waiver wire pickup of the year, and I'm sure we'll think of a few other awards to come up with. And I haven't figured out the guest. We're gonna have a lot of guests on in the off season. Expand our repertoire here, our pitch mix on fantasy baseball today. I have a few people that have already agreed, but I just have to figure out which one. So I'll get back to you guys on that one, but we'll figure it out.
That's a
please
lot of power, Frankie.
Subscribe. Yeah. What are you gonna say, Scott? You're about to say something.
I'm just wondering if you can handle it. You can handle the power.
I don't know. I don't know if I can. I guess we're just going to figure it out. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel for the off season. Every podcast that we do here is still going to be put out on video. Again, that is youtube.com/fantasybaseballtoday. And join our Facebook group. Lots of keeper and dynasty questions and discussion going on there right now. facebook.com/groups/fantasybaseballtoday. The link is also in the episode description. Last but not least, our 2020 performance review. Normally, we're supposed to do this with our bosses. I don't even know when that happens because I haven't had one yet here at CBS. But email us, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, or even me personally, frank.stanfill@cbsinteractive.com, and let me know what you liked from this season, what we can improve upon, what you liked, what you didn't like, segments that you liked, something you'd like to hear more of, something you'd like to hear less of, what was your favorite part of the season. You know, we're trying to make this thing as great as it possibly can be. We are the podcast of the people. So I want to hear from you. Let us know, what did you like? What did you not like from 2020? All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to look a little bit at what happened on Thursday. I have some hitters that are hot right now that I want to talk about that you might want to add for the weekend, as well as some 2021 chatter. We'll do that here, Fantasy Baseball Today. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour.
They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you, let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
Welcome back, and before we get to some of these hot hitters that you can add for the weekend, I do just want to give a nice little shout-out to Alex Gordon. He announced that he is retiring after this season, 2020, and it's been an interesting career for Alex Gordon. Bounced around a little bit, you know, former top prospect, eventually kind of made his name in Kansas City, had some big moments on their World Series team as well, so shout-out to Alex Gordon and the Kansas City Royals.
I think his whole career was with the Royals. So,
he was a top prospect, right, Scott? And then kind of failed. And then
Right. No, he was very hyped as a prospect when he first came up and looked like a bust for a while and then figured it out in his late 20s. And, you know, had a nice little peak there, Alex Gordon. But, hasn't been useful for a while. But, you know, we wish him well in retirement, certainly.
Must be nice. Wish I could retire in my 30s.
He's my age. He's 36. He was born. Let me think here. Let me do the math. He is 50 days older than me. Exactly. Alex Gordon.
Good to know.
You think it's 49, but you got to remember 1984 was a leap year.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Look at that. Yeah. Nothing gets past Scott. That's why he's the best in the business. All right, some hitters that are hot. Austin Hayes. This is just the time of year where Austin Hayes, you know, final month, September. It's something about September. It's something in the air that Austin Hayes every year. I remember I picked him up in a few leagues last year, and he brought me to the promised land, helped me win a few championships. But since returning off the IL, Austin Hayes has 16 hits in 11 games. So he's someone that you might want to look at this weekend. Miguel Cabrera is red hot if you want to snag him for the weekend. 4 home runs in his last 4 games. He has 3 multi-hit games in a row. And mentioned a while back, like, he has some really good StatCast numbers. He just was greatly underperforming those basically all season. Again, that is Miguel Cabrera. And Josh Fuentes, a name that I brought up the past couple of days. Doesn't hit for a lot of power, but is providing batting average. And he had 2 more hits on Thursday. He's batting .321. And just a reminder that the Rockies have a doubleheader this weekend against the Diamondbacks. Scott, Austin Hayes, Miguel Cabrera, Josh Fuentes. If you had to choose one for the weekend, which one would you choose?
If I had to choose one of those three, it'd be Cabrera. Not wild about any of them though, if I'm going to be honest.
Oh, you know what? I was supposed to mention Dylan Carlson. Yeah, Dylan Carlson's in this mix too. He had 2 hits. He hit a home run. And he has 8 hits in 7 games since being recalled. Scott, would you take Dylan Carlson over any of these?
Yeah. Yeah, he's probably at the top of the list. Though, again, I'm not wild about it.
He's performing well, man. He's trying to...
Oh, I know.
He's trying to pick that ADP back up for next season. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's no reason to give up on Dylan Carlson long term. And it's nice that he's... having kind of a redemptive finish here, though I don't think there's any way he salvages the numbers. You know, pretty good finish here.
Yeah, the overall lines are numbers are not going to look good for Dylan Carlson. I'm pretty confident of that, unless he, I don't know, just goes on some crazy barrage over this weekend. Thursday is not so hot pitchers. We already mentioned Lance Lynn and Patrick Corbin at the top. Alec Mills stunk. That's a nice call by you, Scott. You would not let me talk you into him. 3 2/3, 8 hits, 4 earned against the Pirates and Chris Bubich on the other side. Not in this game, but on the other side of, you know, what we were right and wrong about. Was not great against the Tigers. 4 2/3, 8 hits, 4 earned, 3 walks, 5 strikeouts. Reminder that the Tigers mash lefties. Anything you want to add on those two, Scott?
I mean, I was getting pretty excited about Singer and Bubich, and I guess Singer still has one last chance to leave a good taste in our mouths. But I liked a lot of what they were doing. Bubich in his previous four starts had a 1.99 ERA, 25 strikeouts and 22 and a 2/3 innings with a lot of swinging strikes too. So, you know, hate to see him finish this way. He did show us something. He'll be some level of sleeper next year, I'm thinking. That's about it.
What about Kevin Gausman? Is he going to be a sleeper for next year? I guess it depends where he lands. I believe he was on a one-year deal with the Giants, but he went up against the Rockies on Thursday. Six innings of two-run ball, nine strikeouts, 20 swinging strikes on 100 pitches. Just a fantastic season here, Scott. 3.68 ERA, 3.12 xFIP. The swinging strike rate is up over 14%. He's throwing his fastball harder than ever before, still throwing his splitter a ton, which is his bread-and-butter pitch. But yeah, it was a great year for Kevin Gausman. Is this one of those things where he's kind of sucking us back in because for years he was supposed to be a sleeper and would always let us down? I guess as long as he's not pitching in Baltimore, he's kind of enticing.
Well, no, it didn't go well for him in Atlanta. Well for him with the Reds.
Didn't he pitch well as a reliever there, or am I making that up?
I think he started out well. I'd have to double check and see where those numbers ended up with the Reds out of the bullpen. I mean, this was a completely different Gausman than we've ever seen before. I mean, he was just whiffing everybody. His strikeout rate, you know, it goes up from where it is here, but 11.6 is what it entered the day as with a 2.6 walk rate. And you mentioned that he was even better than his numbers according to XFIP. Like, this guy looked like an ace, frankly. And if that seems like an overstatement, good, because I feel like he didn't get nearly enough attention for it. And obviously, you know, you compare that two-month sample to the vastness of his career, a guy who's basically 30 years old now. You know, you have to... You don't want to just assume this is who he is going forward, but if he's valued appropriately, then I'll absolutely be behind Kevin Gausman as a sleeper, because this was just an unbelievable season.
It's worth noting that he has used his changeup more in 2020 more than ever before. 14%. His previous high for this pitch was 5.6%. Maybe, you know, the past couple of years as a reliever, he didn't really ever need a third pitch, but yeah, I mean, he's basically four-seam, 95 miles per hour, has that wipeout splitter, and started using his changeup more. Again, that is Kevin Gausman. David Peterson, he was at the Nationals, seven innings, one run, only four strikeouts. That is three straight starts, allowing two runs or less for David Peterson, a 3.44 ERA, but a 5.11 xFIP. Anything to see here, Scott? Any excitement for next year?
Not really. He's a guy who pitches to contact and gets a decent number of ground balls, but not enough that I think that's going to sustain him. That double-digit strikeout effort against the Braves last time was an outlier, and I think he showed it today. So I'm not super excited about David Peterson going forward.
Someone who also pitches to contact is Dallas Keuchel. He had another strong outing to end his season. Six innings of one-run ball and a 1.99 ERA. For Dallas Keuchel in 2020, 3.97 xFIP. So, but Keuchel and you know, it reminds me of Marco Gonzalez. I think they're similar pitchers. Marco much better control and doesn't walk as many people, and he's gonna have a better WHIP than Keuchel. But I can see them probably in like that SP 40 to 50 range next year. Scott, Keuchel and Marco Gonzalez. I feel like that makes sense.
Yeah, they are.
Better in
they
points
are,
leagues.
They too. Are where you go at starting pitcher. Forget the 1.99 ERA, Dallas Keuchel. That's not gonna be a thing. You know, mid to high threes is what you're hoping for with him. They're the kind of pitchers, he and Gonzalez, that you go for when, you know, the aces are all gone and you just can't afford you can't afford to take a pitcher who's going to sink you. Because for the most part, the pitching pool is pitchers who are either very useful or very not. And Dallas Keuchel, Marco Gonzalez, there are a couple of just a handful that are in the middle of those two extremes.
And I think these are good names to pair with upside. So, you know, take one unknown that has upside on your bench, take one of these guys, a high floor pitcher, to kind of balance that out on your teams. And they're obviously much better in points leagues as well, so keep that in mind. Dallas Keuchel and Marco Gonzalez. Gonzalez just goes so deep into starts for the Seattle Mariners. But yeah, fantastic seasons for both of them. Hyunjin Ryu, also a fantastic season. Shut down the Bronx. I'm not even going to say it because they were not the Bronx Bombers on Thursday. 7 shutout, 4 strikeouts for Ryu, a 2.69 ERA. Ends his season with a 3.31 xFIP, 51% ground ball rate, 26% hard hit rate. That was top 10 among qualified starting pitchers this season. He will be 34 years old when next season starts, but I don't think we should let that deter us from Ryu. I think he'll be in that mix as a top 25-ish, top 30 starting pitcher for 2021.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a great 3-year run for him. Granted, one of those years he missed half of it with an injury. Another one of those years was really just 2 months. But nonetheless, it's hard to say Ryu isn't reliable at this point.
All right, Scott, I'm about to say one of those crazy things where, you know, you have to rein me back in. I go out on a tangent. Adalberto Mondesi. He went 4-for-4 on Thursday with 2 steals. That brings his league lead to 22 stolen bases. He has gone 24-for-80 in September. He is batting .300 this month. And, you know, an okay first season back from shoulder surgery. Batting average is, you know, at .230 overall for the season. But, you know, if he can get that up to like .250 next year with as many steals as he gives you, his average exit velocity is still over 90 miles per hour. If people don't realize what Mondesi has done in September next year, and you're getting him at a discount in a roto or a head-to-head categories league, Scott, I'm going back to the well with Adalberto Mondesi.
Well, what's a discount?
So he was like a 4th-round pick this year, 4th, 5th-round pick. If he goes later if he goes later than that, I'll be interested.
So 6th round, you're saying?
Yeah, 6th, 7th.
Okay.
you don't seem as enthusiastic.
I mean, it's been a great month of September. I was trying to figure out what changed in the batted ball profile. Still a terrible line drive rate, still a terrible strikeout rate. but, you know, basically one of the 2 months he was great. So I don't know. Very confusing player. I was shouting him from the rooftops heading into last season and felt very much let down by him. This season at the plate has been even worse, but you know those steals are going to be there, and there remains that chance that he breaks out as a hitter with decent power production. Somebody's not going to sink you in batting average. It remains on the table. He's young enough. There are some interesting, you know, you mentioned the exit velocity, but I don't know. The numbers for this year, even with this rebound, the overall, the batted ball profile, like I mentioned, the expected stats, it still does not look good for Adalberto Mondesi.
That was like a really long way of Scott saying, no, Frank, you're wrong about Mondesi. I don't want anything to do with him next season.
But that's not what I was saying exactly. I'm just not going around 6th, round 7.
Yeah, maybe it's too early. We'll see where everyone else settles in ADP. Again, this is only in roto and categories leagues, not in a points league. Don't want anything to do with Mondesi there. Let's stick with the Royals. Mentioned his name at the top. Salvador Perez, 2-for-4. Hit his 11th home run. Scott, he is absolutely the second catcher off the board next season. There's no doubt in my mind. Small sample, doesn't matter. This guy has been so rock solid for so long. How much older do you think he is than Wilson Contreras?
We never ranked him as anywhere near a top 2 catcher.
No,
I think he's 3 years older than Wilson Contreras, right?
He is 2 years older.
2 years older.
So, yeah. I mean, it's not a huge disparity.
But there's a huge sample size of him basically being a .230 to .250 hitter who hits 20 to 25 home runs. And then he has 2 months where he does a lot more than that. And the line drive rate is way up. I don't think you can just say because he hit a lot of line drives for 2 months, I don't think you can assume that's who he is anymore. And I really don't see anything wrong in Wilson Contreras' batted ball profile. If anything, it got a little better in what was a disappointing season. But, you know, he was still, I was looking earlier today. I think he entered for Thursday. Wilson Contreras did as the fourth best catcher in points leagues. So, you know, maybe overstating the level of disappointment there anyway. Salvador Perez has been amazing. He's had an amazing 2 months, but there's a lot of track record there. And I'm putting him third because it gets to a point where, like, who deserves to go ahead of him? I think Wilson Contreras, with his superior track record, with the fact I don't really see anything wrong in the underlying numbers, I'll go Wilson Contreras number two and Salvador Perez three.
It's been an inconsistent track record for Wilson Contreras because he's had two fantastic seasons. His rookie season was pretty good too, but that was only 76 games. He had one terrible year in 2018. This is Wilson Contreras. And then in 2020, it's 2 months, but I mean a 725 OPS for Wilson Contreras. He is hitting more line drives. You like to see that. He's lowered the ground ball rate. So those are good things from Wilson Contreras. But man, I put their Statcast numbers side by side. Salvador Perez, 359 expected batting average. Are you serious? 699 X slug. Wilson Contreras, 259 XBA, 454 X slug. Salvador Perez is very similar.
This is gonna be the big debate over 2021 rankings. I'm not looking forward to it, but I can already sense it happening. The people most invested in baseball are the ones I'm engaging with on Twitter and, you know, in late September, I'm sure it's the ones most invested in it. And it seems like they're treating 2020 like the numbers produced in 2020, like the numbers produced in a full length season. And that is just absurd because 2 months is not anything like 6 months. It's not. And so a lot of that Statcast data, it means nothing to me. This is what's frustrating about it is normally you can put together an argument, you know, a well-reasoned argument backed up by numbers. But I think a lot of the defense for my rankings is going to be, yeah, but those numbers don't really mean anything. They might mean something, but they're incomplete. They're incomplete by more than half. So who knows how the next 4 months would have gone for Salvador Perez. I know how the last 4 years have gone for Salvador Perez, beyond that even. I am open to the idea he's a changed player now. I have no reliable evidence he is, though.
Outside of...
I said no reliable evidence.
Okay. I mean, it's just weird because, and I hear what you're saying, and maybe I'm falling for it too far the other way, right? Because it's the same thing with Jose Abreu. It's the same exact thing, Jose Abreu exactly, and Salvador yeah. Perez. So obviously, I loved both of these players coming. We did our all-star teams, you know, players we draft most. I had Salvador Perez as a catcher. I had Jose Abreu as the first baseman. So I really liked both of these players coming in, and part of the reason I liked Salvador Perez was I thought the year off, 2019, when he was recovering from Tommy John surgery, I believe.
Yeah, Tommy John surgery. Yeah.
I thought that would help him in 2020 because he had taken such a beating the past, whatever, 6-7 seasons before that, playing so many games at catcher. He was basically an Ironman. He would just play so much. And I thought that would help him this year, having that year off to kind of like rejuvenate himself. And so I think that's part of the explanation of what he's done so far. And it's only 2 months, so I could see him being, you know, having a fresh offseason again heading into next year, and he's going to play a ton, and he's going to give you volume. He doesn't walk at all.
Yeah, he's a low-risk catcher. If that's the argument you want to make, that's fine. Is he this guy?
No, he's not going to be an OPS over 1,000 for a whole season, but...
Is he going to be an OPS over 900? What was his career-high OPS before this year?
792. Yep.
So what was it? Exactly?
It was 792.
Okay. All right. So almost 800.
Yeah. And Wilson Contreras had two seasons over. Well, if you count his rookie year, three, but it's kind of like 2.5. Wilson Contreras had two seasons over an 800 OPS. All right. So
Maybe I will add that I don't think it's ridiculous to rank Perez second over Wilson Contreras.
We're debating over one spot, you know, like we're splitting hairs, basically.
I don't think it's ridiculous, but I'd rather have Contreras.
Okay.
And I don't think that's ridiculous either.
No, I don't think it is. But I'd rather have Salvador Perez. Where else do we go from here? Pablo Lopez got his revenge against the Braves. 5 shutout with 6 strikeouts. We were kind of waffling over whether or not to use him because last time he faced, was it last time? 2 times ago? Whenever he faced the Braves, he got destroyed by them. But he got his revenge and finishes his season with a 3.61 ERA and a 3.72 xFIP. Walker Buehler had a successful return as well to the mound for the Dodgers. 4 shutout, 1 hit, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts, 11 swinging strikes on 65 pitches. I don't know that it means much. Hopefully he pitches well in the postseason, Scott, and give us a little bit of confidence in Walker Buehler heading into next season. But I think what you said about him recently, that he's just not going to have a lot of innings. You know, what is that going to mean for 2021? Are you going to invest a second round pick in Walker Buehler? That's probably too rich for me. But if he falls into the third, that's probably where you have to actually start thinking about him.
Yeah, that sounds right to me too. And look, this is going to be a problem. This is going to be the single biggest question heading into next year is what are teams going to do with every single one of their pitchers, considering the innings jump's going to be huge for everybody. Everybody who makes every turn in the rotation, it's going to be huge. And, you know, obviously that's happened before. Pitchers have lost most of a season to injury, well-established ones, and then they come back and they take on a workload like nothing happened. So it's not going to affect everybody, but it will affect a lot of pitchers. And I don't feel confident I can predict with real confidence which ones it will affect. You know, more established, okay, it'll probably affect them less. Less established, it'll probably affect them more. But there will be some from each of those piles who are treated like they're in the other pile, you know?
Yeah, I love that you started off that analysis by saying, well, this will be the single biggest question in the offseason. But we just had a whole argument about how much, like,
I know
this season's numbers matter for like Salvador Perez and Jose Abreu.
So those are the big questions.
Those are the two biggest questions.
How much is any pitcher going to pitch? And how much do the numbers we just saw actually mean? Those are pretty big questions that affect every single player.
I'm going to write those down because that's basically those are the two questions we're going to ask every one of our guests in the offseason. And you'll have, I don't know, maybe 20, 30 different answers. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the offseason and how much we take these things into account.
It's going to be crazy. I'm hoping because we'd really reached a point, the people who rank for fantasy baseball, the fantasy baseball community, if that's what you want to call it, where there was almost too much consensus with the rankings because the data had become so reliable and so widespread that everybody was kind of working off the same information and it was hard to argue against it. But I'm hopeful the season we just had with data you shouldn't really trust on the same level means there's a lot more hunches being played. There's a lot more, there are more discrepancies from one person's rankings to another. That'll be like the good old days. And I hope that happens. I hope we don't fall into like groupthink when it's not backed up by data the same way. We might, but we'll see. I tend to gravitate toward groupthink because I'm kind of building my rankings around where I think I can get a player. So I'll be contributing to it if it happens, but hopefully it doesn't.
Scott, I was on a few islands heading into the season. First time here, you guys were out on Machado. You guys were out on Abreu. I brought that to the table. And of course there were players that you guys were in on that I was out on that came to fruition as well. But yeah, I think we already kind of have like different mindsets, at least me and you. Like,
oh yeah, looking at data. I mean, there are always disagreements, but yes. Frank, it's take it from somebody who's been doing this for over a decade now. There is much more consensus than there used to be. It's really hard to be truly on an island from everyone else over a player. Basically, Nando DeFino does it, and nobody else.
Speaking of Nando, we will have him on in the offseason, so that will be a lot of fun. I think it was last year before Vladimir Guerrero Jr. got hurt. Nando posted a picture on Twitter of his rankings, and he had Vlad ranked inside like his top 20 players in redraft leagues. And look, that's why Nando's the best, man. He is bold, to say the least. He will take the players that he loves, and you know, he has his reasons, but it's going to be fun to talk to Nando and find out who some of those players are for him heading into next season. That'll do it, Scott. We're done. We're done with the 2020 season. I want to thank you, of course, Adam, Chris, for making this such an easy first season for me. It's been a lot of fun. So thank you to those gentlemen, and thank you, Scott.
There was nothing easy about this season, but it was great, and you're obviously a big part of that. So it's been good. I look forward to the off season. I look forward to however many seasons we have together. It's a good thing.
Indeed, it is. It sounds like this is a farewell, right? Like we're going away for like the... No, we're going to be back next week, guys. It's not that big of a deal. Thank all of you as well, the listeners and the viewers on our YouTube channel. For Scott White, I am Frank Stanfill. We will be back again next week. Bye-bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.